And in 1995, I was in a psychiatric institution with major anxiety disorder, panic disorder, PTSD, and depression. So welcome to the conference. I'm so happy you're here.
And so I don't mean to be flip, I really don't, but it's my story and I'm not ashamed, I'm not embarrassed. It's why I'm here with you today.
I am Tammy West and that is my story. Welcome to Consider Yourself Hugged, a place to find comfort and support as you navigate your mental and emotional well-being. So sit back and relax, unless you're driving, and get ready for this week's hug. Welcome, beautiful, wonderful fellow huggers, to part three of Stress Awareness Month. And this week's hug is about women and money. I'll tell you, I just got home last night. If you have not heard me talk about mental health first aid, then please ask me. I need to have a bracelet that says ask me about mental health first aid. But this was one of the bracelets we got. I went to this summit, which is like a conference. It was day long in St. Louis, which I have a thing to add about that in just a minute. But I went for my first mental health first aid summit. I am an instructor. I'm also a mental health first aider. And so this is all about learning to recognize like signs of mental health challenges, substance use challenges in friends, family, colleagues, coworkers, things like that. And then to be able to be a bridge for them to resources. So it's all about not fixing, but bridging, connecting, helping. And the goal is to have one in 15 people across the country, maybe, I'm not sure, because it is a global thing, trained in mental health first aid. So it was so wonderful. And just like last time when I started with the story, I do have a point to make about that. But let me just share one more thing. When my two of my boys who are 32 and 35, when I said that I was driving to St. Louis for this conference, they both immediately said, "How do you feel about that?" And I thought that was so nice because I don't know if you remember, but I was carjacked about 2.5 years ago in St. Louis. I was pulled out of my car, assaulted and carjacked. And it was a really difficult time for me, of course. And so I thought that was so sweet that they would say, "Well, how do you feel about that?" Like they immediately remembered and they didn't even think twice before they asked me. And I thought that was so sweet. But we're here to talk about money today, and I have so many things that I've written down, but I made a list, okay? Money was an issue in my decision as to whether or not to go to this summit. So here's my list of things that had to do with money. It was free. Now, it was a part of a bigger, like, week-long conference of the National Council for Mental Wellbeing, which is who, like, puts on, sponsors, who credentials mental health first aid. And that conference was, I don't know, it was very expensive, but it was out of the scope of what I needed to attend. But the day-long summit was free. It was in driving distance to St. Louis. So I was able to, I did have to rent a car, but so that I didn't have to fly. But I did have to pay for rental car and gas. I only paid for one night hotel. They fed us, which was so wonderful. I didn't stay. Okay, so the first session was like at 8 and it was like coffee and networking. And then the last breakout session was at like 2 or 3, but then they had a couple of evening things. Now, I didn't stay for those evening things. I left there about 3 o'clock and drove home. The main reason was because yesterday morning, I think, I don't even know what today is, I had an early event. So I couldn't really stay. But even if I didn't have an event, I probably wouldn't have stayed for that extra day because I would have had to have paid for another day of rental car. I would have had to pay for another night of hotel. And so I don't know, is money holding me back from things? And that's maybe, you know, that's what we're here to talk about today, because what would have happened had I been able to stay for that networking time? You know, think about your time growing up. I have a lot of things to talk about to set the stage today, but I'm going to try not to ramble. I know you're thinking you always ramble. But growing up, we did grow up in poverty. Money was to be spent. Like my mom received, and I don't remember, and I sure hope I'm not overshooting on this, but I think it was like $40,000, $40,000 or $50,000 that she received from an aunt who had passed away. And it was gone within months. She gave some to my sister. She gave some to me. And certainly I was grateful for that. One of the things, as I go into the list of things I did well, I paid off some debt with that. But the rest of it was fast food and taking a day trip and things. It was all about things. And so I grew up really not understanding money. Like, think about you and your relationship with money. I didn't understand it. I didn't use it well. I just didn't know. Well, then there's, as an adult, there's like pre-COVID and post-COVID. Finances changed for me tremendously, which I've talked about a lot, after losing all of my speaking business, which has since come back, thank goodness. But there's just been so many changes in the world. So let's revisit. Did I print this out? I think I did not print this out. So I'm just going to read from my screen. So I'm basing all of this on the Stress of in America report. So remember, there's Stress in America. Stress Awareness Month, part one and part two. And both of them, I'm using the Stress in America report as sort of the foundation. So let me read a few things to you. Although finances are a top stressor for everyone, talking about them is off the table. Only about half of adults said they are comfortable talking with other people about money, and more than 2 in 5 adults said they felt embarrassed talking about money. I mean, it's one of the things where, I got to take a drink here. It's one of those things where if we don't learn how to manage it well, it can become a source of embarrassment, especially if you can get to my age, which is almost 60. All right, another thing. Among the day-to-day stress categories, money was 63%. I'm not going to go on into the different age groups. I'll post all that in the show notes. You can see that. Money for, although ages 18 to 34, was 82%. And I just want to mention women, because that's kind of what we're focusing on here today. And where did that go? Oh, man, man, man. Okay, here we go. This year, people of all genders reported that health and finances were among the top sources of stress. But women were more likely than men to report feeling, and they use this word, consumed by their worries about money. 50% of women versus 44% of men. Among those who cite money as a significant source of stress, women were more likely than men to report both paying for essentials and unexpected expenses as being high sources of stress. I want to talk to you for a minute before I go into a little bit of the other research that I did, because I remembered that years ago, I had read this book called What Every Church Member Should Know About Poverty. And then I'll put a link to that. But then there's, if you're watching on YouTube, I'm holding it up here, A Framework for Understanding Poverty. Both of these were written by Ruby Payne. But I want to do something quick with you, and I'll put links to these. I guess I'll just put a picture of them in the show notes. It's talking about the hidden rules when it comes to money. And those rules are within classes. So there's poverty class, middle class, and wealth. So I just want to ask you, I'm going to go very, very fast. So if you're driving, there's no like number, but the three quizzes are, could you survive in poverty? Could you survive in the middle class? And could you survive in wealth? Okay, I'm going fast. Could you survive in poverty? Number one, I know which churches and sections of town have the best rummage sales. Number two, I know which rummage sales have bag sales and when. Number three, I know which grocery stores' garbage bins can be accessed for thrown away food. Number four, I know how to get someone out of jail. Number five, I know how to physically fight and defend myself physically. Number six, I know how to get a gun even if I have a police record. Number seven, I know how to keep my clothes from being stolen at the laundromat. Number eight, I know what problems to look for in a used car. Number nine, I know how to live without a checking account. Number 10, I know how to live without electricity and a phone. Number 11, I know how to use a knife as scissors. Number 12, I can entertain a group of friends with my personality and my stories. Number 13, I know what to do when I don't have money to pay the bills. Number 14, I know how to move in half a day. Number 15, I know how to get and use food stamps or an electronic card for benefits. Number 16, I know where the free medical clinics are. Number 17, I'm very good at trading and bartering. And number 18, I can get by without a car. Such interesting questions. I'll put again in the show notes. Now, could you survive in middle class? Number one, I know how to get my children into Little League, piano lessons, soccer, etc. Number two, I know how to properly set a table. Number three, I know which stores are most likely to carry the clothing brands my family wears. Number four, my children know the best name brands in clothing. Number five, I know how to order in a nice restaurant. Number six, I know how to use a credit card, checking account, and savings account, and I understand annuity. I understand term life, disability, 2080 medical insurance, as well as home insurance, flood insurance, and replacement insurance. Number seven, I talk to my children about going to college. Number eight, I know how to get one of the best interest rates on my new car loan. Number nine, I understand the difference among principal, interest, and escrow payments or statements on my house payment. Number 10, I know how to help my children with their homework and do not hesitate to call the school if I need information. Number 11, I know how to decorate the house for different holidays. Number 12, I know how to get a library card. Number 13, I know how to use the different tools in a garage. And number 14, I repair items in my house almost immediately when they break or know a repair service and call it. Are you seeing how this, I don't know where you are in the class, but you'll probably know pretty quickly. And then the last one, could you survive in wealth? Like we all think, well, what do you mean, could I survive? It's very interesting. Number one, I can read a menu in French, English, and another language. Number two, I have several favorite restaurants in different countries of the world. Number three, during the holidays, I know how to hire a decorator to identify appropriate themes and items with which to decorate. Number four, I know who my preferred financial advisor, legal service, designer, domestic employment service, and hairdresser are. Number five, I have at least two residences that are staffed and maintained. Number six, I know how to ensure confidentiality and loyalty from my domestic staff. Number seven, I have at least two or three screens that keep people whom I do not wish to see away from me. Number eight, I fly in my own plane, the company plane, or on the Concorde. I don't know if that's around anymore. Number nine, I know how to enroll my children in the preferred private schools. Number 10, I know how to host the parties that key people attend. Number 11, I am on the boards of at least two charities. Number 12, I know the hidden rules of the junior league. Number 13, I support or buy the work of a particular artist. And number 14, I know how to read a corporate financial statement and analyze my own financial statements. Have you thought about those things? You know, the last thing that I just want to give you a couple of things about are some of these hidden rules. And I just want to go through possessions, money, and that's probably it for now. So according to her research, Ruby Payne, possessions for people in poverty, possessions are people. That's why you may see someone having a lot of children. For middle class, possessions are things. And for the wealthy class, possessions are one-of-a-kind objects, legacies, and pedigrees. Now, money, poverty, it is to be used, it is to be spent. That's how I grew up. Middle class, which is where I am now, to be managed. Wealth, it's to be conserved and invested. So I go through all of that to say, you know, what are your views on money? How were you raised thinking about money? What does money mean to you? And this, you know, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not a financial planner. I don't have expertise in money, but I do know that money, according to these surveys, are a huge source of course, air quotes here, stress, especially for women. So I have a few things that I wanted to read to you. And as I told you before, of course, I just did read to you, but just about diving in deeper, right? So we looked at the APA report. We're diving in a little bit deeper. And I'm not going back any further. That book actually is older. But the research, like I want to stay current. So really just two articles that I pulled up, both of them, links in the show notes. Women are stressed about money is what this one is called. 93% of women, according to this different report, are stressed about money. And one of the things I talked about that I haven't mentioned, we just talked really about your thoughts. There is a wealth gap between women and men that has been stubbornly hard to shake. So despite women's increasing level of education and our representation in senior leadership, women are still more likely to take time out of the labor force or reduce the number of hours worked because of caretaking responsibilities. And it's often referred to as the motherhood penalty. Now, I enjoyed the time off that I took. I really did, you know, in my life. But you can see how that sets you back financially. It's just part of the penalty. So what did I have a list here? I'm sorry, this has been a very busy week for me, so I'm not super organized. So thank you for showing me some grace. As I did before, I thought, okay, what did I do well? Like as I just revisit in my mind, times passed and I had five things. I got a job when I was 16. I bought a car for cash on my own when I was 17. When I was married to my first husband, we started a money market and an IRA. Fourth, when I was divorced and single, using the envelope method, which is what the financial piece, Dave Ramsey, this was like, you know, late 90s, early 2000, I paid off all my debt, my car, my student loan. The only thing that I had was my home. And then this is an interesting one I'm going to share with you because I'm saying it's what I did well. I made use of government help when my husband at the time got out of the military. We moved home. We had two children. We had one on the way. We were rebuilding our lives and we used food stamps for a time period and WIC, women, infants, and children to help us to take care of our family. And I feel like that's what I did well. So you may think that's weird to put that in there, but we needed it. And that's what it was there for. What I did poorly. In that first marriage, we financed a lot of stuff. I never saved money. I don't know what that meant. So we financed our furniture and just all kinds of different things. And then there wind up being some financial crashes during that marriage. I stopped contributing to that money market IRA at some point. I don't remember when, but after my divorce, I didn't plan for my children's college education. And the last one, again, an interesting one, I worried, but I didn't take action. So just like we did before, think about the things that you did well. Think about the things that you didn't do well. And again, I'm not here to give you financial advice because that is not my thing. But I do have this article called Three Money Moves to Help Women Minimize Financial Stress. I mean, here I am almost 60, and because of the things that have happened in my husband and I have been married almost 21 years in our second marriage. We've lost things due to, we got sucked into a Ponzi scheme years ago, and we lost a lot of our income. We had a few rental houses. It was a really tough time. I'm going to say that's through no fault of our own because it was extreme trust in that person that we got involved with. We've also made some bad choices, and then COVID was out of our control. And so I feel like we're recovering yet again. But remember when I said earlier that I just worried and didn't take action? I'm trying to do so much better now in this rebuilding. Let's look at, I think this is the best financial advice. And I'm going to post a link to this article. And it has so much more than what I'm going to talk to you about today. Today, we're going to be kind of short together because this is not my area of expertise. But I hope me sharing my path with you and telling you some of the steps that I've taken will be helpful. This shouldn't be news to you, but this is the path I'm trying to take right now. Three steps that can yield big results. Saving for emergencies. So having that 3 months worth of expenses in a fund that you can rely on if something happens. I have done that. And actually, I've had to rebuild it several times. But I feel, you know, many women will feel so much more peaceful if we know our finances are in order. But we got to take steps to do that. And so having that emergency fund, when I know that's there, I have so much more peace. Second, saving for retirement. This is where, gosh, you know, we just didn't do well. But what we're doing now is catching up. So I had some money left in that Roth IRA that I talked to you about. I met with a financial, well, my husband and I did. We met with a financial advisor a while back, and we're getting all of this transferred over to this new financial advisor. And then we're going to make a plan for having that emergency fund be in a savings account that actually gains interest. And then we're going to have the Roth, the IRA that we will begin contributing to as much as we possibly can to catch up. So I'm 59, he's 62. It's like, woo, I cannot believe that we are almost at that point. And it gives you some more information in there. And then the last one is thinking ahead. And this is where meeting with a financial advisor helped me so much. It feels embarrassing. You don't want to be, at least I didn't. I didn't want to be honest that here I am 59 and I don't feel like we are prepared for the future. But it was really helpful to go through, well, what are your goals? What are the things that you want to accomplish? How much money do you want to have when you retire? You know, travel is probably not going to be as important to my husband and me because we've traveled all of our lives practically. And so when we get to that point where we're not working anymore, we might just want to chill. We might just want to be home. And so we're not super worried that we need to be someone that's going out and cruising every week, although it would be nice to have that option. So just looking at your goals. I hope that that has been helpful to you. I do feel more peaceful, you know, and also you probably know that I am guided biblically and spiritually, you know, I'm a Jesus following woman. So I do put a lot of trust and faith in that, trying not to push and worry, but just to take steps and plan and put the worry behind. That's what I'm encouraging you to do. So there we are. Week one, I think we talked about, what did we talk about? Week one, we just did maybe the overall report. And then the second week of Mental Health Awareness Month, we did family responsibility. This week, we are doing finances. And next week, we're going to end Stress Awareness Month with relationships. So thank you for joining, for downloading, for inviting people. Please follow me on my professional Facebook page and join my private women's page. All of the links will be in the show notes. So get out there, plan, and until we're together again, consider yourself hugged.